Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to A Celtic State of Mind. Today I'm delighted to be joined by the frontman of the Glasgow band, the Bluebells, Mr. Ken McCluskey. Hello, Ken.
How are you, Declan?
I'm all right, mate. How are you keeping?
I'm not bad, just trying to keep busy.
Good, man. I am delighted that you're on to chat to me today. So we're going to be covering your memories of Celtic and your music career. So the first question I'd like to kick off with is, what's your memories of Celtic from your early years and what was it like growing up a Celtic supporter?
Well, I was brought up in Bothwell in Lanarkshire and surrounded by places like Huddingston, Hamilton, Belsill and Blantyre and all that. It's a big sort of footballing area, so it was quite a big deal. With Jimmy Johnson lived up the road, who married a distant relation of mine, and also with Davy Hay and all these guys. It was very much, when I was really young, my dad used to just take me up to see Hamilton Accies, and he would take my older brother Philip to see Celtic. So when Philip got a wee bit older and was able to go out to football himself, my dad used to take me to mostly kind of European games during the week and all that. But I remember the first real memory I have of going to see Celtic was, it was a weird game. It was like 1971, and it was the last game the Lisbon Lions ever played together or ever appeared on the same park. It was they were building the new stand at Parkhead, and it was a kind of building site. So they were playing the game, but like part of the Parkhead was like a building site. So the new stand, as it was then, was just kind of foundations, and they'd done a bit of build. So my old man took us to that bit. So we were standing in the bit that was still being constructed. It was weird, but we were really close to the park, and I remember, I think it was 6-0 to Celtic.
6-1 against Clyde, yeah.
Against Clyde, and I remember Bertie Auld sat in the ball very close to where I was. So I would have been about nine then, just turned nine. So I remember that. I think it was 6-0. But it was the last time the Lisbon Lions appeared at Parkhead, but Ronnie Simpson didn't actually play. He came on, he was stripped and he warmed up, but then he got a kind of round of applause. And he jaunted off, and then so I think it was the last time they appeared in the park. But yeah, so mostly kind of European games after that with my old man and all that. And the school we went to was quite a big footballing school. So the couple of years above me, my brother was the same team as George McCluskey. He was that was St John's in Huddingston, and then we moved on to Holy Cross. We had the onus on football was massive. When a teacher and all he taught was football, he didn't take English or maths or whatever. And from that, you know, Paul McStay, who was a year below me, and Willie McStay was the year above me, holy cross. There was loads of football, loads of really good football players about. It was a kind of football school I went to.
Right.
I never got into the football team, by the way, so I played rugby. I wasn't very good at football.
So, as you're saying, you started first coming along to Celtic Park towards the end of the Lisbon Lions, and still, obviously, Celtic were winning 9 in a row at the time. So, who was your kind of Celtic heroes growing up?
Heroes growing up, at the end of that team, you had, well, you still had Johnson, Bobby Lennox, and then you were moving into the new Quality Street guys like Dalglish, and you had McGrain. All these guys are excellent players.
A good team and a good year to be growing up a Celtic fan. So obviously people will know you as the front man of the Bluebells. So how did kind of moving into music come about from school and then end up becoming...
Right. So I mean, I think like all boys in that area, everybody played football. You just played it all the time. It was just a thing, you know, you just played over the park. But as I said, I wasn't skilled. I wasn't a skilled football player. So when you give up your football career about 11, because you're not getting picked for the team, or maybe 12, because you're not getting picked for the team, you start looking at other things. So, as I said, me and my pal started playing rugby, which was a laugh, just for fun, really, just for something to do. And then when the punk rock thing kind of happened, it was kind of easy to sort of, it was like, it was open. It wasn't elitist. It was, you could, you know, we had a guitar knocking about the house, and you get a few chords together and start writing songs. So it was that kind of DIY sort of thing, sort of do-it-yourself. So you had fanzines, do-it-yourself fanzine, do-it-yourself magazines, you had bands like The Clash, kind of saying get three chords and start a band. And we did. And we go and see bands like The Buzzcocks and all that, or The Apollo. And you kind of just saw that MD, it was open for MD. You know, it was the kind of end of all that sort of pomp rock sort of where you had to be really proficient to be a musician. MD could be a musician, so we all just started playing around with guys and some friends around about Bothwell and Uddingston area. And we started a wee punk band called Rodeo. Me and my brother, David, and two guys from Uddingston Grammar, Dixie Deans has a good name for you, and Donald Kerr. And we had a wee band called Rodeo, and we started playing in Glasgow, places like the Mars Bar, the Bandstand down in Custom House Quay. And it was at one of these gigs that we met the guy who would be Bobby Bluebell. And he had a fanzine, which again were really popular at the time, and it was called Ten Commandments. And it was a really good fanzine. It started off as one of these kind of basic Xerox, you know, Xerox things, and eventually got quite good. And he was building up this kind of fanzine, and it was beginning to sell quite a few copies, and it was getting pretty good magazine. So he interviewed us, gave us a good review, and I think I went to London at that point to sell a demo tape to try and get a record deal, which never happened. So I just stayed in London, and when I got back up the road at Christmas, the embryo of the Bluebells had kind of formed with my brother, Bobby Bluebell, Russell Irvin, and I kind of joined as a harmonica playing roadie sort of thing at first. I was just mates with them, and then I started singing more in the recording studios just at Charing Cross up the road here, a place called the Hellfire Club, and I would do gigs as the Bluebells, places like the Rock Garden and the Unis and all that. And it was great. It was a really good kind of open scene. And out of that scene, you had bands, you had the Postcard record scene, you had Orange Juice, Aztec Camera, Joseph K, all these bands. And we were kind of a wee bit of the coattails of that. So we were going to make a record for Postcard Records. The guy Alan Horn really liked one of our songs called Everybody's Somebody's Fool. And we recorded that in Hellfire Club, Big Davey Henderson. And by this point, Postcard 81, 82, Postcard was beginning to fall apart as all the bands were leaving. Aztec Camera went to Rough Trade, Orange Juice went to Polydor, and we thought, well, there's no point in doing a Postcard record, really, is there? At that point as well, Glasgow, especially Scotland, but especially Glasgow at that time, was an A&R person's dream. There was loads of bands, there was loads of talents to tap into. I wish I had made a Postcard record, but we didn't. And we signed, we sold our soul and signed to a major record label called London Records. And, you know, the usual marketing, promotion, all that kind of stuff. But we worked hard. We did a lot of tours supporting bands. So we supported Elvis Costello, who became our producer and kind of mentor. He was excellent. Kind of taught you how to use a microphone and all that, and, you know, really good guy. After that, we toured with bands like Haircut 100, got a kind of younger audience as well. And then we started getting a lot of radio play, started doing a lot of music sessions, and we started having a couple of flops first, and then we started having a few hits and travelling widely all over the world.
So going down to London's kind of a step into the unknown. So what was that kind of like, going into London early 80s and then kind of starting to meet figures like Elvis Costello?
Yeah, well, I think at that point, football kind of took a wee bit of a back step there. We used to go and see teams like Chelsea, because that was kind of near where we lived. I was actually an Arsenal fan. That was my English team. But we lived kind of quite near Stamford Bridge. So we used to go and see it, but it was football hooligans and all that. It was really quite scary. Aye. It was a scary time. So it wasn't really a time to go and see football. We were just into like playing music really at that point, and traveling the world and just meeting different people and having a really good wheel of a time. So football probably took a backseat at that point.
So probably your definitive album, Sisters.
Yeah.
How did they?
I haven't got a copy of that. That's a very pristine copy you've got there, Dick.
So obviously there's a cover on it. If anybody listening knows the album. And it's got all different pictures on it. Do you want to talk us through the cover and why Billy McNeil's on it?
If you put the cover up, Billy McNeil, that was a testimonial, I think. Billy McNeil, Robert, Bobby Bluebells, he's a bit of a graphic designer. And he liked the idea of cut and paste. But before cut and paste was a thing with computers, he was always cutting bits of paper out and, you know, that kind of DIY thing, which the postcard bands and the punk bands had all kind of utilised. So he liked the idea of cutting wee things out. So there's a picture in the front, Billy McNeil with Bobby Charlton. That's from the Hotspur. Next to that's a picture of my mum and dad when they get married. Bottom left's Robert's mum. Robert's mum's Italian. She's from Italian, but she was born in Italy. There's a wee guy from Kess, which is one of our favourite books at the time. There's a big chunky guy on a motorbike. That was just because he was funny. There's a picture of Stalin there somewhere. I don't know why he's there. I think Robert was maybe toying with Stalin at the time. I've no idea. There's a picture of two wee girls. That's why it's called Sisters, the album. Sisters, that's a picture from the art gallery, just second left there. There's a picture of Gene Vincent. Turn around the other side. Oh, let's see who's here. Oh, there's a picture of Picasso there at bottom right. There's a picture of my grandfather, top left. There's a wee picture of me from school right in the top right as well. It's just a sort of collage. Led the idea of collage and cutting paste, scissors and glue.
So kind of side one of that, you spoke about everybody's somebody's fool, and kind of that would have maybe been the kind of postcard single if you were going to maybe go for that.
Yeah, well, it never actually came out, but that was the one that was earmarked by Postcard as a single. Yeah,
as a side in an album, it's single after single. I mean, you've got Young at Heart on it, I'm Falling in Calf. What was the kind of the background behind doing a Bananarama song that ends up top 10 initially and then years afterwards then becomes UK number one?
It wasn't the Bananarama song for a start. It was Robert, Bobby Bluebell, went out with Siobhan from Bananarama, and they wrote it together. So we did it first as a kind of Northern Soul sort of thing. Ba, 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 ba. And then they took it on, they did a version. They were short of a track for their album. So they put it on their album, which is called Deep Sea Skiving. And so we continued to play it. We played it in that sort of manner, the Northern Soul sort of way. And then we went in with Elvis Costello to do a kind of production early on of that, and we turned it into a country and western sort of bump, 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 and a kind of shuffle beat and a snare. So that was kind of maybe a wee bit his idea. But it was stuff we were into. We were always into sort of country music. We liked Glen Campbell and we liked Johnny Cash and we liked Dolly Parton and all that, as well as all their cool punky stuff, you know. We were always into country, and then the Bob Dylan, the sort of countryside of Bob Dylan was always important. Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young, you know, all these kind of bands. So it was quite a simple change. So by changing the snare drum in that track and adding a fiddle, it became a different entity, you know. But that's all things. In those days, the good thing about those days, we could experiment. I think it's really hard. You don't really get the time to experiment now, I think, as a young musician. you know, that we had a wee bit of space. So when we started, when we signed off to a big label, London Records, we had a couple of flops. Now, if you had a couple of flops in the major label now, you'd be down the road, you know, you'd be sacked.
Yeah.
Whereas in those days, they actually kind of helped develop. Not to say that they were all nice guys and they gave you loads of money, but they did give you a wee bit of time to develop, which was nice.
Would I be right in saying that when it hit number one, the Bluebells had finished in the late 80s and it was...
Well, the Bluebells kind of finished in 86. What happened was we had a couple of flops, a couple of hits, and then anyway, three top 40. We did have three top 40. Kath was released, so that got to 39 or something. But Young Heart and I'm Falling were the biggest ones. But the problem then is when you have hits is you're going to play in all these different territories. The video age had kind of started, but we didn't really make that many big glamorous videos. So the onus was on live music. So we went away to Germany for 3 or 4 months. We went to America. We went to Japan. We went travelled everywhere. And then when we came back, after having these hits, nobody knew who we were. You know, like, we went to the record label and were like, who are you? Because it was all different secretaries, it's all different managing directors, it's a completely different ballgame. So we were kind of, we came back and we were kind of aliens. And the Smiths had arrived, so the Smiths were top of the pops by that point. So that's why I never liked the Smiths. Holy kid.
So 86, just to tie in, 1986, there's a story in Matt McGlone's book, Emotionally Celtic, about a trip to Kiev. Could you shed any light on getting kidnapped by the KGB?
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Well, that was bizarre, man. It was the time of, I think it was Glasnost, Perestroika, all that. But at the time, 1986, there'd just been the big Chernobyl disaster. So it's our nuclear reactor, which is maybe about 50, 60 miles from Kiev. That had gone off about 4 or 5 months before. The actual trip to Kiev. It was the away game. The away leg was in Kiev. It was one each at Parkhead, and then went to Kiev. There was a guy called Dan McCann, worked for the Celtic View, good friend of mine, and he organised some tickets. Because of the radioactive fallout, they said like they didn't want fans to travel independently, so we got a seat on the plane. With the players. The players were in the front of the plane. They chartered a plane. The players were in the front and they had a wee curtain and they pulled the curtain and we were maybe about 60 fans, 70 fans. And it was great. It was dead exciting. So we went through the Iron Curtain as it was then, arrived in Kiev to find that it was a kind of prohibition. There was no alcohol. Alcohol sales had been banned. So I think everybody was looking for a beer. We went to this kind of Western kind of hotel which we were staying in. And there was a wedding going on. So we fired in. They had some raspberry beer and some fruit-flavoured beer, which wasn't very nice. We drank that and we kind of... The wedding people were great. They kind of invited us to the wedding. Had a great laugh. And then they ran out of beer. So me and Matt McGlone decided to try and go and find a pub somewhere. And it was a bit like The Pedestrian by Ray Bradbury. Everything was shut. There was no cars in the street, nothing. And it was really quite cold. So we went for a wee walk and a big, huge black motor pulled up and it was like a scene from a film. Pulled up and the guy says, get in. Guy with two guys, leather coats, leather hats. And he started, one of them could speak good English and he started interrogating us. And what are you doing here and blah, blah, blah. But they were quite friendly, really. One of the guys said he jazz, so we started talking about jazz for a wee while. And Matt had two Scottish pies, Scotch pies, in his pocket. And as a peace offering, he gave them the pies. And the guy cut one up and he says, I'll keep half of that for my wife. So they both fired into the pies. They drove me home and let us go. They were actually really nice, but it was a wee bit scary for a wee bit of a minute. We thought we were going to get the nick.
So that's Kiev. One of the other ways you worked with Matt McGlone was on the Wally Malloy Experience album.
Yeah, that was for the centenary year. So yep. There was a guy called Arthur Haggerty who's from Clydebank. And Arthur started this kind of renegade Celtic supporters club called the Willie Malloy, the Toker Willie Malloy football fan club. And everybody got, it was really good. It was a good fun. And everybody got a little card and each, you were different colours. So you could be I think I was a pink Willie and then there was a green Willies and white Willies and all that. And, but it was people from across a wide spectrum of different areas. It was people in bands, people who were in sports, people, there was just people from the Toker, Clydebank, James King and Lone Wolves, loads of bands were all members of it. So they got all the ones who were a wee bit musical, stuck us together, and put us in the studio for, I think it was like 24 hours or something, supplied us with pizzas and a few cans of beer, and we made an album in like, I think it was over 2 days or something like that, which is called The Wonderful Experience. The anniversary album, and it's great. That was great fun doing. Again, we used all that DIY sort of thing. Okay, how are we going to do this? We'll get some old songs and revamp them. You also had Kenny Hislop, who had been in Slick and all these things. He was more into dance music, so he did Had to Be Celtic, which is a kind of early house, kind of house music based track, and we did the more kind of traditional ones. So it was me and my brother David did all the kind of folky stuff. James King from Lone Wolves came in. There was the Willie Choir. That was a laugh, conducting them. So we put it together really on a small budget, but it was all Arthur Haggerty's kind of brainchild, really. And Arthur was a pal of Matt McGlone. So we all kind of knew each other from different areas. It's part of the big thing, you know, the Celtic diaspora. So even though we're from Lanarkshire, we know the guys in Port Glasgow and Greenock and Clydebank, and you know, you just end up travelling with them or meeting them through music. So music was so we didn't go about gigs saying, what team do you support? But you get drawn together because you see each other at games and stuff like that, and maybe travel abroad with certain people certain times.
The songs on that, as you say, are songs that are ones you probably grew up listening to. And that, mm-hmm. One of those songs probably makes its way onto Sisters, which we were talking about there previously, in Patriots Game. I think personally that song kind of reflects more the time when that album comes out, especially with the Falklands War and stuff.
It was the Patriot Game, you know, it's misconstrued a lot of the time. It's usually the context of somebody who's carried away with patriotism, sort of idea of it's about the futility of war. At the same time, in 1982, 83, 84, you had all these, this idea of the Falklands War around about that time, and you had this sort of whole big jingoistic sort of idea of, yeah, let's go. And it was alien to us. The idea of war attacking a country was alien to us. And people, I think, were getting fed up with the whole idea of young people being sold out by older people through patriotism, being told things that, you know, and they're going on to fight for their country and, you know, whatever. I never really get into that. I'm pacifist and I'm more international socialist. So we weren't really into the idea of let's get carried away with patriotism.
Working down in London, you were saying about the whole kind of Celtic diaspora. There is a close connection between Celtic in the Arts and through the Willie Malloy Experience. You obviously worked with guys in other bands. Why do you think there's such a kind of close connection? Why do you think Celtic's got so many different kind of supporters? We seem to have the kind of the best ones out the lot.
the best ones. I don't know. I think it's maybe take ourselves serious to a certain extent, but we've also got a joie de vivre. You know, I think we've got the idea of we're quite creative. Who's quite creative? I think Celtic encourages that, maybe with the Cavalier kind of style. And it attracts people who are maybe creative I don't know, depending, it doesn't matter about your upbringing, really. It's you want to be with the team that are the fancy dads. You want to be the team that are trying different things. You don't want to be with the cloggers and the, you know, you want to be creative. I think it attracts people. Also, in our upbringing as well, it was very musical. So nearly every weekend we'd have a party in our parents' house, and everybody would be singing and, you know, playing the banjo or whatever. And it was very much part of our culture, music and dancing and, you know, being creative.
Can I, meeting guys like that, I had met Shane McGowan when you were down in London.
Shane McGowan, yeah, a couple of times. The first time I met him, he was very grumpy. He was working in a record shop just off Oxford Street, and he was gutted because Young at Heart had been a hit. This was like the first time it was a hit, 84, and it got to number 8 in the charts. And we went into his record shop, and he's like, "Ah, Young at Heart, I know." And he's a bit like the Steptoe's son guy, you know, the old guy. So he wasn't very, because he thought we'd nicked his idea of that sort of country and Irish sort of thing, you know, because it was a fiddle in Young at Heart and the beat, and it had nothing to do with the Pogues, actually. But we always, in our music, as the Bluebells or the McCluskey Brothers, there was always like an underlying traditional music element anyway, from an Irish background or a Scottish background, you know. We kind of had that. You can see it more in the B-sides of the records. So from our first meeting with Shane McGowan wasn't too clever, but after that we spent 16, 17 hours in each other's company, drank ourselves sober, and David and I had a brilliant time with him. He was absolutely a wee bit pissed. We went to McGinn's pub, which is down the bottom of Hope Street, and then we went to back to his hotel room. We were staying in the Central Hotel. And what a laugh we had. It was brilliant. He had a big boogie box with tapes, and all he played was Jimmy Shand all night. He said that's the stuff he was brought up in. Jimmy Shand, you probably think he was brought up in the Dubliners. It was Scottish. He was into Scottish accordion music. I mean, he's into loads of stuff. He's a really clever man. Great company. Amazing company.
Music today, what kind of stuff are you into? Do you get along to a lot of gigs?
I do go to a lot of gigs. I work at a college. It used to be called Stowe College. It's now called Glasgow Kelvin College. So I work in we've got a wee record label there called Electric Honey Records. So I take the students to quite a lot of gigs. A lot of good wee gigs about here. There's a Hug and Pint and all that. You know, Stereo, Nice and Sleazy, all these sort of places. So I do have to go to see quite a lot of young bands, which is fine art. I like that. I like the gigs over here. We have the Bandstand. Regular Music do a great job of promoting stuff over there. Unfortunately, I don't think it's going to happen this year, but I do get to a lot of gigs. What do I like? Everything. I actually really like, when I was a kid, I was into the Clash, and then I was into, you know, the Postcard thing, and I kind of like the ska thing. I like bands like Orange Juice or Specials or The Clash or The Damned or something, that kind of stuff. But now I kind of just like songs. I don't really have a hero or whatever. I just like individual songs. So there's one I was listening to, I was trying to work out the other night there, and it's because the John Prine died a couple of weeks ago, and I was just listening to one of his songs, Summer's End. So I was kind of trying to listen to that and play it the other night there. But my missus said, "Could you stop that? You just sound like John Prine," or try to be John Prine. So I don't like ripping ideas off. I like songs. I like individual songs. So it could be a Taylor Swift song. It could Everybody Shake, 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 Shake. It could be that, you know, which I really like. It could be Push the Button by the Sugar Babes. I love that. It could be Bob Dylan's You Droning 15-minute song. I quite like that.
I like it.
I like it, man. There's a lot in it. I think there's a lot of really good contemporary songwriters in Scotland. Like, there's King Creosote. I really like King Creosote stuff. Loads of stuff. Loads and loads of stuff. I play in a band sometimes called Port Sulphur. My friend Douglas McIntyre, again, big Celtic fan. But he's a Celtic fan and an Ackies fan. So I've got a bit of that in me as well. I've got, you know, first year I went to see where Hamilton Ackies, really. So I was too young to go to Parkhead, but I've still got a soft spot for Hamilton Ackies. And a lot of my friends from Lanarkshire have still got a soft spot for Ackies. So yeah, just songs, really, just songs.
And you were supposed to be getting back out on the road with the Bluebells. You had a gig planned in Edinburgh.
Well, there was quite a few gigs. We were going to be playing that, doing the Rabbit Hole.
Right.
But that was just pulled yesterday. That's the big festival I think Public Enemy and all that were playing at this big sort of hippie
Sebastian,
fest.
I think as well, yeah.
Bell Sebastian, yeah, they were going to be playing it. So that was in, it's kind of Portman Teeth. So that was just pulled yesterday, unfortunately. We were also supposed to be doing Fine Fest, which is a good wee beer fest in Loch Fyne. That was pulled last week. Edinburgh Festival gigs pulled. So I don't think we'll be playing really till, I can't see us playing till November or December. To be honest, but we only kind of do the music part time because we've all got kind of full time jobs.
Yeah, of course, but obviously wanting to make sure everybody's safety is the main priority, and hopefully you can get back out there.
Of course, you wouldn't endanger anybody. You know, you there's no point. It's only music. You know, the same as it's only football. It's not your life. You know.
So going on to football to finish. What have you made of Celtic this season? Obviously, we're 13 points clear. We still have a league that's been undecided. Have you enjoyed watching Neil Lennon's team this season? And what do you think your tap might end up?
I wish, it's unfortunate. It'd be great if we could end the season, obviously, and then there would be, because if something happens, like it's 8.5 in a row or whatever, you know, it would be a nightmare, wouldn't it? Oh, you didn't really win, you know. So, I don't know. I think we've got a great team. I think we've got a really good team. Iceland and Cake being Edouard. I really like McGregor. I have a good solid team. Forrest, Christie, and Cham. Julian, I like Cham. Something about him. And Cham looks dead like a musician. See after this, go onto YouTube and look up Sonny Boy Williamson.
Right, okay.
Right, Sonny Boy Williamson. There's loads of stuff in black and white on YouTube. Cham looks like Sonny Boy Williamson. Even the way he holds himself, you know, the way his shoulders are and all that. But he looks dead. Like, and Sonny Boy Williamson is one of my heroes as well. So I like him. Scott Brown's still in there, isn't he?
Yep.
He's still doing a good job. And McGregor, obviously, great player. So there's loads of really good players. It would be great if we could finish the season and take the title once again. And the quadruple's still on, isn't it?
Quadruple's still on, yep.
Is it still on? That's mental. That is totally mental. It'd be great if we could do that. But as you say, the most important thing is people's health. So, and we have been the dominant force. Definitely since Christmas. And they've been playing some really nice football. They've obviously not, you know, wiped the floor. We have to look at their bogey team, Livingston and all that,
yeah,
you know. But it's been good watching them. And I hope they can get back together soon and get back to training and get back to impressing us all with their silky skills.
I hope so too. And I hope the Bluebells can also get back out there and you can...
Oh. We'll get there at some point, yeah.
Yeah. Right, Ken, it's been a pleasure. Thanks for joining us in a Celtic state of mind.
Okay, it's been a pleasure speaking to you, Declan. Thank you very much.
Network. With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.